Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
That's true.
I've done it once.
As in everybody.
I don't know. Anyway. Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Of course, happy Saturday to all of you. Yes, across the room from me is that blue-eyed man, Steve Silva.
Where?
I don't know. And I am Sean Robertson. This is your Weekly Dose podcast.
We thank you for joining us today as we're streaming live to you from Orange County, California. If you're new to the Weekly Dose, this program is about having fun and laughing.
That's right, laughing at all the things that we experience in everyday life. The embarrassments, the silly things, awkward things, the fun things, even the naughty things.
You know, the things that connect us all, the things that make us human. And as they say, laughter is the best medicine.
And to all of our listeners, old and new, we always love it when you are a part of the show and join the conversation. You can do that several ways. Comment on our website, yourweeklydose.com.
Send us a message via Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1.
Say hello to us on Facebook at yourweeklydose.
Or if you want to send us a personal message, you can email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
Absolutely. Well, today we got a pretty fun show for you guys. Of course, it's just Steve and I in the room, but that's okay. Because at 10:15, we got movies reviews with Paul Preston. And then, of course, we got Olympic tweets. We'll be talking about the Olympics because they are ongoing right now. We're in the middle of them. And then about 10:45 or so, we have a quick interview with Joe Chavera. We'll be talking about the concert he's going to be doing for the Trini Lopez tribute in Las Vegas on August 11th. And, of course, we'll be talking about we lost an awful lot of people this week. We do want to mention those and bring some of those people up. And, of course, it's avocado fun facts and the best guacamole recipe.
I love guacamole. Now, you can always download past shows for free from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you are on the go, you can subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Just search for Your Weekly Dose and, most importantly, tell the world what you think of us. So please rate and review the show.
Yes, please do. Of course, today's theme song is Love in an Elevator by the mighty Aerosmith, or Aerosmith, however you want to pronounce it. Doesn't matter to me. But basically because yesterday was National Talk in an Elevator Day, having conversations.
Talk in an elevator. Yeah, so that's what most guys end up with.
Yeah, talking.
Talking in the elevator. Yeah,
unless you hear, it's like everybody's looking at each other.
Who did it?
Yeah, exactly. But we thought we'd take it one step further and go love in an elevator. It's a little bit more fun, a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, favorite Aerosmith song? Do you have one?
I can't think of it. I like them.
You know, to me, it's amazing because they went through this whole thing of being discovered in the 70s and then kind of died down. Mm-hmm. And then the 80s just had a huge resurgence. You know, and so having songs like these, Jenny's Got a Gun, and you know, and I think ever since then they've just been a staying power within rock overall, which is really good.
They seem quite popular.
Yes, very much so, very much so. And of course, guys, don't forget that anytime we play any music on our website, You can simply go to, or actually on our show rather, go to our website, that is, and go to the Amazon banner and click on that and then bookmark it, because then that way you can shop for any music that we play here on the show and any music that your heart desires and, of course, anything else that your heart desires. They got everything on Amazon. You know that. We know that. They've been around for so long. So just use our banner, and that way we can stay on the air. That's all we're asking
and
for.
And they're like Leon. They just keep getting larger.
Yes. Yes, they do. So, because every time, again, once you guys shop through our website, we keep hearing that. Oh, I love this part.
It's keeping me up at night. Loving it up when I'm going down.
Pick a note. Anyway, that was pretty good. I love that ending. Such a cool ending. Such a cool ending. So, anyway, should we catch up with each other?
Why not?
All righty.
Been behind for a while.
Steve.
How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good. Drinking some ice cold water.
Did you have a good week?
What did I do this week? I kind of lounged a bit and everything. Worked with, got together with my friend Janelle. We've been rehearsing, you know, getting her back up on par with trying to get her equivalent to my guitar playing. Basically, I feel like I got like a hair in my mouth. I don't know
why. Some must be fuzz in the air.
Ah, here. No, I got it. There it is, little son of a bitch.
It had a hair in it.
I did. Well, no shit, dummy. You got a beard. Hello. But got together with Janelle, and we've been having some really, really good rehearsals, which is nice because she's not one of those where it's like, okay, I'll give it a try kind of thing. It's like, she actually works on the songs for the next week, you know, so that way when I go back, okay, we go through them. How do you feel? You feel comfortable? I want to work on this. I want to work on that. Okay, fine, because I'm so used to these songs. I'm adaptable. It doesn't matter to me, and I want to make sure that she's more comfortable performing and everything. So so every time we get together, I mean, it's actually a really good rehearsal. So we had a good one on, Wednesday, and it's been kind of a little bit relaxing and everything. I know we were talking a little bit earlier about the primers and everything, of course. Those came in for me. So for those who don't know, and trying to not speak in code, but basically I am a... How do you describe it? A nutcase for...
He's a gun owner.
Well, not a gun owner. Yeah.
How you doing?
No, it's not that. It's... I have a fascination with the Western guns, basically, is what it is. I have a romance with them. You and I both worked at Knott's Berry Farm. We were cowboys there. Loved it, working there as a cowboy.
A lot of fun.
And just that persona of the cowboy, you know, the old Western. And I love Western movies. And, of course, Tombstone was on the last three nights this past week or whatever at different hours. And I watched it every freaking time I was on. I had to watch it. And because I just love that movie. You know, and especially the part where Kurt Russell throws out Billy Bob Thornton, you know, at the beginning of the movie. You gotta stand there, just bleed. Like, that's so cool. He goes, I don't know. All right, well, come here. So anyway, I've wanted to get involved with what they call Quick Draw.
McGraw?
Yeah, kind of, basically. Yeah, be a cartoon. Get involved with the whole Quick Draw thing of what there's an organization called SASS, and it stands for the Single Action Shooter Society. It's been around since 1989.
Or SASS,
yeah. and then there's also the Quick Draw League, basically, where they do have competitions. So for it. So I ordered my gun that I need to get for it to start practicing. And what they do, though, is really interesting. Instead of using regular bullets, they use wax bullets. Mm-hmm. So, and then you buy these special cartridges for your gun, and they use what they call a large pistol primer. So it's a little bit larger primer is that little cap that that the hammer hits on the back of a casing to ignite the gunpowder inside, which therefore pushes the bullet through. But you only need the primer only and the wax bullet, and that's it. And that's how they practice.
Yeah.
So there's no gunpowder involved or whatever. So if need be, I can even practice in my backyard if I want, mm-hmm. and just do the quick draw from one corner of the yard to the other. But just using wax bullets. So I finally got all those in. So I can't wait to go out and try it and see. It'll be the first time of me trying to use it, you know, and everything. So I'm kind of excited about that because I haven't shot for quite a while. So I'm excited.
Been a while.
Yeah. And then of course, I've been working on the trains this week, too, so a little bit. So I can get some.
You should paint that mountain, like, blue and call it Blueberry Mountain.
Blueberry Hill.
Blueberry Hill.
So, but that's been my week overall. So I got booked for a couple of more shows coming up. So I'm excited
that's
about
right.
that. Yeah.
That the cool restaurant.
Dude. Yeah. Which is Phil Tranny's out in Long Beach. They mm-hmm. called me. Trish called me back. Thank you, Trish. And booked me for a couple more dates. So we'll announce those as they come along and let you guys know when I'm playing. So,
yeah. That was really fun when we were there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I got lucky because of that one family.
Well, yeah, they were really cool. And
poor Doug.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah. But it was nice. It was cool. How about you? What was your week like?
Okay. Remember we were talking about cooking shows, and I couldn't remember the person and the show and all that. Well, it was Alton Brown.
Uh-huh.
And it was Cutthroat Kitchen.
Oh, okay.
And that's the thing. When I was up in with my daughter and her family in 2016, they would make me watch a whole bunch of these because they just loved it. And it was really interesting. It was different kind of show. And they had to shop in a refrigerator to get the stuff they needed for what they were going to make. And then they all tried to buy things to screw up the other person.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of cool. So they were you could buy like a bunch of little plastic forks and spoons and knives and then make one of the other cooks only use those. They couldn't use any other knives, any regular knives, butcher knives. They had to use the plastic.
Oh, wow.
So stuff like that. It was pretty. They would take away your flour. You're going to make a cake, take away your flour.
Well, how do you make a cake?
Stuff like that. Well, wow. See, you had to somehow
figure out a way to so continue on. Yeah. Wow, that's
a lot of times it was like that. How the hell are they going to do that? And they had to just think on their feet.
That is pretty cutthroat.
So, yeah.
I'd be saying, fuck it, man. I'm going to go to Ralph's and get myself a cake then.
Mmm, I need just, cake too. I love
just
cake.
Just go to Ralph's and buy cake. It instead if you can treat me that way.
Cake. So I wanted to.
And sometimes you can learn quite a bit from those cooking shows.
Yeah.
Like there was one time it's like, God, how can I do it faster, but how can I do it better? Just like even making pasta, like regular spaghetti pasta. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course you boil it, you know, to a certain degree, but it's like, right. How do you know when or whatever? And I was watching Gordon.
Throw it on the wall?
No. Well, that's how I used to do it. You know, how do I know when it's ready? You know, yeah. You throw it up on the ceiling. If it comes down pretty quick, oh, it's done. If it's stuck up there, shit, it needs to cook a little bit longer. But no, where I looked it up one time, Gordon Ramsay, you know, mm-hmm. and he says it should, when the water is boiling for a minute, 30 seconds to a minute, that's when you put in your pasta. But before you do that, put in olive oil in the water
mm-hmm.
and then throw the pasta in. And he said about 7 to 8 minutes, you're fine. So that's what I do now, and I just leave the timer.
It can depend on how long on how al dente you want your pasta. You know,
right.
If you want it a little bit...
crunchy?
Well, crunchy, I guess. But, you know, I tend to, when it stops being chewy, that's when I like it. When it stops being like pasta.
Uh-huh.
And more like just a limp noodle.
Sometimes that can happen. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it's I just use that method basically, and mm-hmm. and then I'll throw in a quick, you know, sauce thing. I won't do my mother's sauce because it takes all day to do it, you know. But I'll get like a good Prego, and then just doctor it up. You
yeah,
know,
that's
put,
what I do.
Put some mushrooms, some olives in there, mm-hmm. more garlic and everything, and then put in some meat and some sausage, mm-hmm. and cook all that in, so it makes a decent sauce. And then once that's done, do the pasta for 7-8 minutes, and I'm done and ready to go. So it makes it easy for me. So, but yeah, as long as you can learn some pretty cool little tricks on that. You know who's good at movie tricks, though?
Who would be good at movie tricks?
That would be Mr. Paul Preston.
Oh, I thought it was Rin Tin Tin.
No. That's right. Our buddy from the movieguys.net, Mr. Paul Preston, is on the phone waiting to give his reviews of the latest, the greatest films of 2021. Hello, Paul.
Hey-o.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, that sounds like Paul.
He's having a foghorn moaning.
Am I the only one who heard at the top of the show you were playing Love in an Elevator, and the first words of the show were Sean saying, "Boy, there's nothing like love in an elevator," and Steve says, "Yeah." Wow. You guys got stories. Do you need a moment alone?
Oh, no. if the elevator walls could talk.
Then the show became your weekly sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Fun so far.
It's a good segue, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. How you been, brother?
So, perhaps not the great, you know, you said something about the greatest movies of 2020. Perhaps not that this week, but movies nonetheless. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, I have to say, Paul, before you get going here, just Googled movies, just the word movies.
Okay.
And you have to know which movie came up first.
Explain.
The Jungle Cruise.
Well, there you go. That's the big movie of the weekend. Didn't get a chance to see it because it just opened yesterday, and I'm not going to watch it on Disney Plus. You know, so I'm waiting for the theater, and I couldn't get out last night, so you're getting reviews of stuff that came out last week. But I guess it'll be big. I don't know. It looks like Pirates of the River. It's got like a supernatural element that no one asked for, but well, it looks like they'll have it anyway, you know, instead of just cruising.
I'm just wondering how many references they're going to make to the ride, though.
Well, what I think it is The Rock like leads sort of hack cruises down a river with like animatronics and fake stuff, pretending, you know, making the ride more interesting for tourists than it is. And of course, he gets involved in a real thing when Emily Blunt's character comes along and asks him to take her down the river to discover like this magical plant and stuff. And then it gets all weird.
Oh, wow.
I think most reviews are kind of just saying it's what you think you're going to get going in. Uh-huh. And none of us are like expecting Best Picture. So,
got it. Speaking of Disney Plus, before we get in, what is this whole thing about Scarlett Johansson suing Disney?
Go get 'em, girl. Because first of all, you've heard me rant on here about like things like Warner Brothers in 2020 just claiming their whole slate for 2021 is going to multi-platform release on both HBO Max and in theaters.
Right.
And so for the guys like Denis Villeneuve, who directed Dune that's coming out, it's like, wait, what? like they didn't talk to him, they didn't talk to the actors, they didn't apparently look at the contracts, they just made this announcement. And he's like, I made this movie for the theaters, it's a huge sprawling sci-fi epic, you can't watch it on your phone, you know. He's like, what do you so he wrote the letter, you know, lambasting Warner Brothers pretty much, and rightfully so. I thought it was a little short-sighted to say the whole year's coming out on TV, you know, and in the theaters.
Right.
And Disney's been doing the same thing. So, I mean, I don't understand why you delay the release of Black Widow a year and a half, almost, and then still put it in TV. If you're going to put it out on Disney Plus, put it out only on Disney Plus a year ago, everyone will be hungry for it, and they'll all go and watch it. Instead, the split format, you know, put it in theaters and in on Disney Plus, and the suit basically says that she was going to make most of her money from theatrical residuals, and it just didn't play in as many screens. It kind of took a dive in week two because people were watching it at home, and so she's like, "You owe me money because my contract says one thing, and you released the film a different way than my contract said." And Disney, of course, responded with like, "Well, we're just saddened by this behavior, you know." But I think she's got a case because, you know, you got to stick to your guns when you say you're going to do something with a movie. And then, I mean, again, if they were waiting a year and a half for theaters to open up, put it in the theaters.
Right.
And now they're doing the same thing with Jungle Cruise, you know. And it's, you know, dopey as I've referred to it. I will see that in the theater because it does look like a big summer spectacle, you know. So good or bad, it's probably worth at least giant screen, giant adventure, giant man, you know, Dwayne the Rock Johnson. The small screen can't contain him. Like half his body will be outside of the edges of the frame. So you got to go to the theater.
At least the upper part.
Yeah, but as a theater lover as I am, to go out to the movies, you know, I don't want to say I'm a fan of a lawsuit at all, but I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'd be pissed too. Denis Villeneuve was pissed. I'm wondering how more people. But I know there was an article going around about how the Pixar team was like, wait a minute, we didn't make Soul and Luca for Disney Plus, and that's where it got released. Now, granted, there's a pandemic, so what can you do? But again, if they're going to delay the release of these movies, then what are we delaying it for?
Right.
For eventually to get in the theater. And I don't know. Again, seems a little short-sighted, I think.
Seems like there should be some sort of negotiation that they come up with a new contractual agreement about release in different formats so that everybody's money is taken care of one way or the other.
Agreed. You know, like people are crapping on Villanueva from the director of Dune, like, what else we signed up for? Nope. Nope. He didn't. The game changed. And then you got to work it out as a team, but the studios just make the call, and then it leaves artists out in the lurch. And, you know, I'm always a fan of the arts. Especially when, you know, I'm doing this podcast, The Ford Fiesta, shameless plug. And my buddy Adam and I at The Movie Guys are watching every one of Harrison Ford's movies and then doing an episode on each one in chronological order. So we're in that era in the 70s now when, like, man, what George Lucas had to do and how he had to argue to make American Graffiti. Like, it just, all the stories from the 70s just show what dummies the guys who run the studios were then. I mean, now more money's on the line. These guys are even dumber, it seems. So, you know, like Coppola just like kicking and screaming to get his movies made. And then, you know, he makes a Godfather and then finally gets a little pull to go and help Lucas, you know, by producing American Graffiti. Yeah, it's just like they had to fight and scratch and crawl and scrape, and you know, it's still going on today.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what they're, especially for the actor's point of view, because of how everything is being released and everything. So I don't blame Scarlett for you know, going, hey, you promised me this or whatever, what have you, so I'm gonna.
Well, yeah. It's a new situation that came up that's never happened really before. Mm. So there's nothing to cover it under rules or contracts or anything. So, it's just the typical, the companies are taking advantage of the situation until something's worked out. That's just the way they work.
Even if they had the best intentions, I think the execution was poor. Mm. You know, just like even last year, if it's April, Black Widow's supposed to come out, you're like, let's hold it off for a sec, and you know, then it gets to be September, you're like, doesn't look like it's going to happen, let's put it out in home viewing in December, we'll restructure the contract, blah, 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 blah. But then they put it off a whole nother year and 3 months or whatever. It's like,
right.
If you're waiting that long, again, I'm repeating myself, but if you're waiting that long, give it the theatrical release you originally planned, or you know, the multi-platform release did not do well for that movie.
Yeah.
Apparently Kevin Feige's bewildered too somewhere, going, hey, caught in the middle, you know, trying to be a good producer for his studio, but like supporting his artist as well, and the whole thing's a mess.
Yeah. Well, speaking of movies, Paul, what is something that we should be go seeing now that movies are opening up?
Well, What should you go and see? Well, actually, is it either the movies I'm reporting on this week?
Yes, uh-huh.
Maybe not. Probably not. You should probably go see No Sudden Move on HBO Max. Here's me railing against the home streaming, but that, alas, that's where this movie went. A Steven Soderbergh movie that has the usual suspects in it, Benicio del Toro, Don Cheadle, and a whole bunch of people like that. It's a great film. But let me talk about what's in the theaters. It's a mixed bag. It's not great stuff. M. Night Shyamalan has his new film out.
It's called Old.
You've probably seen ads for it. He's basically a genre at this point. You know how to watch an M. Night Shyamalan film, right? It's like you sit there and you keep your eyes on everything. You keep your ears open. And there's going to be some sort of mystery afoot. And it's all going to pay off at the end. Well, in this one, family heads to a resort that the mother of the family heard about online. The manager of the resort says, hey, you should go to this secluded beach on the other side of the island. And when they get there, turns out something about the beach causes them to age rapidly. Like they're going to live their whole life in one day. Well, I think it was like 7 years every 3 hours, something like that.
Jeez.
So already this cool sci-fi concept is sort of set up. And Steve, you can probably agree with this, right? Really, if you want to be old on the beach, just bring hard candy, the New York Times crossword, wear your house slippers, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah. and but something to cover yourself up from the sun.
That's right. It's brutal out there. Bring an Afghan, right?
Yeah.
The movie, rather than have a plot, the movie just kind of, you know, they look for different ways to escape or reverse the process. The film spends its time finding new and interesting ways for the characters to encounter these different obstacles of the concept, you know, like, oh, here they've entered sexual maturity real quick, you know, the young kids, and here, oh, their eyesight's going because they're aging. But yeah, there's no real plot, so you just kind of go from moment to moment, all this stuff. So that piled up, and I was like, man, this ending better be good, because like, it's just, we're seeing a bunch of stuff and not really. You know, there's some relationship things that play themselves out, you know, with the dichotomies and the different relationships.
And nobody had the bright idea to just leave the beach.
Well, that's the problem. They can't. You know, they try to. They can't do it. There's different things that play out. You know, so can we climb up the cliffs? Can we walk through this tunnel? Can we da da da? And everything sort of keeps them from happening. There's an explanation for that. But the point is, the payoff is good. So that's very I needed that at that point.
Okay. Shyamalan basically has kind of like redeemed himself then, I guess, with this movie, because I know there's some other ones that he's done where it's just kind of like I don't know.
Well, he's an interesting point right now, because he came on the scene with these great, you know, Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and The Village, and we kind of became like this mystery sci-fi type of guy.
Right.
And then they said, oh, the studios making bad decisions and M. Night making bad decisions. Like, we should put him on our big, you know, our big time blockbuster movie. So they stick him in Last Airbender, After Earth, and these are just not his wheelhouse.
Right.
It's not what he's good at. And those movies tanked and they were bad, and, you know, he became kind of a joke. And so then he did the right thing in teaming up with Jason Blum. Jason Blum at Blumhouse Productions is one of the best producers out there. The guy gives like directorial free reign, you know, final cut to directors. He gives like, got to keep the budget low, like 10 million, 15 million, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't really often force release dates, you know. So that led to The Visit and Split, and then eventually Glass as well. And I think those three, that's the redemption for Shyamalan, and show that he's got the goods still, and he can make a good, compelling, interesting, original movie. Now, this is based on a book, so it's not straight out of Shyamalan's brain, but it totally is his type of movie. So, you know, it was a good choice for him to do. But I think it came out from Universal, and there's a bigger budget attached, so it's like, don't go back to the dark side, M. Night. Stay with the small, you know, concept movies you're good at. But there's another thing that he does that is not great, and it's like he has this penchant for high emotion scenes and pulling them off really well. Think of like Toni Collette in The Sixth Sense when her son says that he can see and talk to her mother, she's all overcome by it. Or think of Mel Gibson in Signs. He's got that last moment with his wife who's pinned against a tree and she's dying, and you see where all that dark shit that Mel has inside him comes out and plays with it real well. That scene is really good. But then he turns around and has trouble, Shyamalan, making scenes like simple transactional scenes, like someone ordering a dinner or something at a restaurant can be like really awkwardly staged or have a bad actor in it or something. And that happens all the time. So these stilted and unrealistic scenes have, you know, are coupled with the stuff that's really more difficult to pull off, but he does pull them off. So it's like, it's an odd mix of success and failure that's kind of a scar in a lot of his films. So worth seeing. And you know, you could never fault to have an AC this time of year, so go enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But right. I actually see this one at the drive-in, and it was packed. I was worried for the drive-in. I was like, uh-oh, drive-in's going to be sad that the theaters are back. But man, every slot was taken up with a car at the Mission Tiki out in Montclair. So
that's cool. That's good. That's good to hear. And the other film,
Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins. Now, this G.I. Joe Origins movie will be like the X-Men origin films in a lot of ways, but mostly that there will probably just be one of them. Because don't see it like taking off and, you know, changing the world. But you got Snake Eyes, probably the most, you know, mysterious of the G.I. Joe characters from the previous movies. And we go back to find out as a young kid, his dad was killed. So he sits out on this path of revenge and ends up in, like, you know, fighting circles. You know how movies have, like, guys fighting and 100 guys around him here throwing money around. He eventually gets into a Yakuza gang, and he saves a guy who was, he's ordered to kill this dude. Instead, he saves him. Turns out the guy's undercover with this Arashikage family, the super rich family, and he gets involved in a whole web of this family versus villains. And they train him, and he becomes the Snake Eyes we know, and with all these skills. And then they learn about Cobra and end up fighting on one of the first adventures.
And does this tie in any other way? So, and I think you just kind of said it, though, with the other G.I. Joe movies that are out, or is it, does it stand on its own almost the way Wolverine did?
Yeah, it stands on its own. If you, you know, if you just kind of know that Cobra is a global terrorist organization, then when they come up, that's not weird.
Okay.
And then, but everything else you can kind of take on its own. It's its own kind of story. They introduce and handle new characters well. I mean, is it over dramatic way too often? Yes. Does it make all the best choices? No. Are the action sequences excellent? Hell yes. They kick. I mean, turns out there's just some pretty enjoyable ninja shit. You know, it's just the other G.I. Joe movies aren't great, so this is the best by just being like full of cool action sequences. You know, and when they bring the supernatural element, doesn't quite work as much for me, you know, as big-time martial arts beat-em-ups.
Right.
But so there's giant snakes and there's a magic stone and all this stuff, and I'm like, eh, you know. But there are some surprises, too. This plot twist I didn't see coming. The character goes this way and takes a hard right, and you're like, oh, I didn't expect that. And then the movie actually takes a risk taking itself seriously.
Okay.
Probably not, but they pull it off, you know, which is to say it's rarely dumb. If it occasionally fails in execution, that's one thing. But something like Mortal Kombat was just, except for like some of the opening sequences I enjoyed, mostly just dumb.
Right.
This is not. And you got Henry Golding, right, who, if you like, you know, Crazy Rich Asians and
which was a great film.
Yeah, and he's great in it, and established himself as like this leading romantic guy. I had no idea he had action in him, but he's viable, and he's brings the right amount of I don't know, sort of easy to watch action to it. You know, he doesn't bring any giant anything to the, you know what you're going to get from The Rock, you know what you're going to get from some of these, but he's just kind of regular guy, but then turns out he's got these crazy skills. So
Yeah,
and it's got scenes where, like, you must survive the three challenges if you are to be a warrior with us. I love movies that do that stuff. Oh, you got to go fight the three challenges. You know, what are those? And then he's got to, like, fight the, go into the woods. If you make it out alive, you can become one of us. Like, that kind of stuff is great. Like the old days when they sent Chuck Norris into the octagon or whatever. You know, I love that. That kind of stuff. So, you know, basically, with the AMC A-list back, if you remember, you got nothing to lose. Go enjoy Snake Eyes. We'll
definitely then check it out. Absolutely. So, Paul, it's always good to hear your voice, my friend.
Yes, movies.
Yes, and what's your next trip that you're going to be taking?
Oh, I'm going up to June Lake, which is a lake that's sort of northeast-ish from Yosemite,
uh-huh.
which is where I went back in April. So that's the next big, multi-day thing. Going up there to hit an inn by the lake and just turn off for a bit.
Awesome. Well, in that case, you enjoy it, my friend, and hopefully we'll then talk to you next month.
All right, guys.
All right, brother.
Thanks, Good. Paul.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Yes, absolutely. Let's get that going, too. Steve's holding up the sheet for our sponsors. Like, yes, we absolutely have to do this. Well, with things starting to open up slowly, it seems that businesses everywhere will be needing some new signs.
Well, not just businesses, but how about bands needing new merchandise, companies needing new canopies for conventions?
Well, where does one go for printing merchandise? Simple. Go where we go. StrangerPrints.com.
Stranger Prints is the official merchandise printer for your weekly dose. They do all of our shirts we give away, but that's not all they do.
That's right. They do so much more, like table covers, canopies, graduation signs and banners, regular banners, stickers, slip mats for DJs, backdrops, sports jerseys, and so much more.
So, for all your printing needs for merchandise, go where we go, Stranger Prints.
Yep, just go to StrangerPrints.com for more information and prices.
That's StrangerPrints.com, and tell them your weekly dose sent you.
Because, damn it, we did.
That's right.
Ah, yes, I always love the sponsors. All right, what do we got next? Oh, yes. Let's, I don't know, how should I start it off? Well, let's start it off.
Are you looking for some music?
Well, no, because I've got two different things. We can kind of go two different ways with this, whatever. Okay. So let's start it off with this. I don't care, we'll play it twice. Yes, the Olympics are here. Have you been watching them?
I just bits and pieces. I haven't really watched them. I don't really have TV to watch, so I don't.
Oh,
really,
that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So. There have just been some really amazing things going on. I mean, everything from what's been going on with gymnastics to swimming, to archery to fencing.
Who would have thought building a fence would be an Olympic
exactly.
sport? That's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's just been so many things that have been going on historically, I think, for us. So many firsts for the U.S. also. For example, in fencing, it's for the first time we have won the Olympic gold medal. We've had a Olympic medalist, but not a gold medalist. So it was the first time we've won gold in individual fencing. And they were saying that everybody on the fencing team, or the majority of them, have come from the Fighting Irish.
From Notre Dame.
Yeah. So not only are they just known for, of course, their football and everything, but they have equivalent titles with their fencing team as they do with the football team.
Oh, so the fencing mecca of the United States, huh?
Yes, and they said about 8 or 9 of the team members have gone to Notre Dame and have been on that fencing team.
Wow, so, how about that?
Yeah, which is really, really cool. Let's see, what else was I trying to think of? I got to watch some of the mountain bike racing that they did.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of cool to watch. It's a little bit different. And then swimming, of course, is always one of my favorites to watch. And I didn't realize this also, but in the men's 400-meter relay, since the 60s, the U.S. male has dominated. They've won every single time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they came close of not winning to this one. But they did. They pulled through. They pulled through. But, yeah, there was only one time that we didn't win, and it's when we boycotted the Moscow games.
Right.
And that was it. So, but other than that, I mean, we have won every single time in that race. So, and of course, the women's gymnastics has just been phenomenal with all the drama that's been going on there. Mm-hmm. You know, and to see other athletes on the women's team step up when their main leader has stepped down.
I was reading an article, actually, just I think it was last night, about the stress that the modern social media places on athletes, because now there are so many people wanting to bully and degrade. That's just what they want to do with people. They want to try to tell people how you know, you're nothing special, you're nobody, because they get a kick out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's actually causing a lot of mental stress for athletes nowadays.
I could see how that could add stress, but at the same token, it's no different, I think, than being a rock star, you know, or any other celebrity, and people criticizing your acting or
happens everywhere.
Or your music, you know. And of course, with social media, it's easier now to do because you can say it or whatever and, you know, hide under an alias name, so to speak, you know, versus your real name. But to me, it's like, I mean, that part of it, I would think that they would at least have it be like a water on a duck. Just have it, you know, roll off. Don't let it get to you.
Well, yeah, that's...
you know, and even though you're on the world stage, but I think where some of the other stress comes from, though, is where everybody is watching. The pressure cooker is greater every year, it seems.
You know? Well, I think it's more just you have people that have direct access to the athletes, like... Even
like a Twitter page.
Even while they're performing and just after they're performing, there's people on there just going crazy about, you know, this and that. And, you know, oh, you only got a 14 instead of a 15. Are you going to retire? You know, just smart ass stuff like that. That, you know, it may not be totally offensive or whatever, but it gets in your head. Even if you don't let it, it's still there, and it's an immediate thing. You can't enjoy a win without there being detractors like immediately going, "Well, you're nothing special. That was just an accident." So the article was just talking about how people just not even knowing that this is affecting them are suddenly like nervous about stuff. And they don't realize that that's just extra negative input that they're not used to. That happens, you know, before and after. It's an immediate thing now. It's like you're talking to people. There's a group of people that don't like you. And so, you know, it's almost like they're watching you perform and making fun of you while you do it.
Yeah, I remember Ricky Rocket talking about how when he would, you know, walk into a room and where... not even knowing who he is as a person, they would hate him right away for who he is and what kind of music he represents. Mm-hmm. You know, and they just, you know, feel vile towards him. But then the same token, there's other people in the room who love you for the exact same thing. You know, so it becomes this double-edged sword, you know, for it. And yeah, I think it's definitely become that with the athletes also, though, You know, it's definitely become that. But just the pressure that they have overall. But was it Simone who stepped down?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was, I think, one of the best things that she's done.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that showed me that she was a true leader. And to let her teammates, even though they were under more pressure, step up. And they did. And one of them won the gold individual, which mm-hmm. was great.
Yeah.
You know, and I applaud her for that because knowing that she wasn't there mentally because of what's going on or whatever. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, it does happen to some of these athletes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, you kind of hope, geez, it should happen at other other exhibitions or whatever. You don't want it to happen here.
Right, right.
You know,
the Olympics has been the ultimate exercise in physical prowess that the world has.
And, right.
It's becoming a target.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, it's been tough. But we've been definitely been excited about it and everything, and been watching it. And we're halfway through. We're done with week one, going into week two and everything. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty excited about that because now we get to see all of the track and field events and everything. And so it's kind of exciting actually now to see all those things all over. So. We are going to step away just for a brief moment, though. I'm going to be playing a song for you guys while we connect with our next guest. So just hang tight, and we'll be right back. Guys, well, on the phone we have a gentleman who we have, I personally have had a great relationship with this past year. We got to interview him a year ago around this time due to the passing of the great Trini Lopez, which is why we were playing If I Had a Hammer. And so please welcome back to the show my dear friend, Mr. Joe Chavira. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing fantastic. Good to be on your show.
Good to see you, brother. Good to hear you, actually.
yeah.
So the reason why we've got Joe on again is because it's been a year since Trini's passed, and mm-hmm. Joe has a special show coming up, which is a tribute to Trini Lopez in Las Vegas on August 11th, and that's going to be at the Rockstar Bar in Las Vegas. Tickets are for sale right now, and... So we want to help Joe promote that show. And Joe, can you tell us a little bit more about what we're going to see and hear at this tribute for Trini?
Yeah, it's going to be a combination of paying respect to Trini, doing his classic songs, Hammer, Lemon Tree, La Bamba. And I had the fortunate opportunity to write 50 songs of Trini, original ones, that was something he told me he always wanted to do because he's never had a chance to write original songs. And so we did a collaboration of that many. So the night of the show, we'll show videos of Trini that nobody's seen before. Him and I took a lot of private home videos on my cell phone of us recording inside his house, his beautiful mansion over in Palm Springs, our trips to Hong Kong, Sri Lanka, tours, concerts, interviews. It'll be fun to share with the public unseen video that I'm also working on a motion picture and a documentary with. But it'll be a collaboration of original songs that he and I wrote, his classics, and a great band, fantastic band that I have backing me.
Cool. And who are some of the players and some of the people that are going to be there for the concert?
One is a guy named Sean Roberts.
Get out of town.
That must be you.
Get out of town.
That must be you. Yeah, you'll be up there on the stage accompanying us. And I have to tell everybody out there, Sean's brilliant. Great, not only great musician, but great attitude, which Trini always said. Well, and Joe, I've met a lot of people in the world, and there's either good musicians that have bad attitudes or great people that aren't too good on their instrument.
That so would be kinda, me. Yeah.
That'd be good. So I got on my drums a fantastic drummer, Gerald Purify. On bass, Edwin Echoes. And guitar, I have Daniel Medeiros. And it's a tight, tight band. We're going to have Sean come up and participate with what we're doing. And I have an opening act, Prince Fleet Easton. He has a Walk of Fame star. And Trini always liked him. And when Trini passed, I got inundated by lots of people, from producers, musicians, vocalists, directors, book authors, you know, how could I help? So since then, I did a book deal with Dennis Young, a brilliant publisher, award-winning writer. And we wrote a book called Meant to Be, Trini Lopez and Joe Chavira. Mm-hmm. And he'll also be attending it. The significance of that is Trini and I had a sharing a little story. I had a car accident when I was a little kid, and I was in a car, and we're in a station wagon, and we pull off the side of the road, and this drunk driver hit our car, and it killed two of my sisters. The car blew up, and I never got hurt, scratched or ejected from the car. And when we got back together after the car wreck, the whole family, because everybody's in the hospital, they were calling me like the miracle kid because nothing happened to me from an impact that hard of the freeway. Mm-hmm. And my dad introduced me to Trini Lopez albums. So where the magic started, I was 7 years old, and my dad's from Texas, like Trini's dad. That's why we had a lot in common. And my dad, you know, picking the family up, like, let's go, keep it going. And he said, Joey, he had a Jazz Slingerland drum set, and he had me listen to Buddy Rich, Dave Krupp, all the great drummers back then, and this guy named Trini Lopez. So I was playing to Trini's songs, singing a song, playing the drums, and I grew up and started playing the piano, guitar, bass, singing, writing songs, and I met Trini. It was a fabulous story to think a little kid in a little town called Santa Maria sees Trini Lopez in movies and with Sinatra, the Beatles, and then if somebody was to ask me, do you think when you grow up you'll meet this guy and be a songwriter? That was a dream come true. And so we thought Meant to Be would be a great title for the book, because Trini used to tell me when he went from Texas broke, flat broke in a station wagon to LA to try to make it, he said he finally met Sinatra's producer, Don Costa, and they recorded live at PJ's. But he said his idea was just to meet Frank, not to ever work with him. He ended up signing a 6-7 year contract with him.
Yeah, because he turned down other contracts with other record labels to specifically, you know, try and get on Frank's label, because he knew the notoriety that Frank had at the time.
Yeah, so when I met Trini, I'd say the same thing he told me he'd tell Frank. I you know, every once in a while we're writing songs, we're eating dinner. I used to spend the night there a lot. Him and his girlfriend and me were like a family, because I lost my parents right before I started doing the first album with Trini. And Trini was so cool. I remember I went to a Steve Miller party thing for Trini did Fly Like a Eagle. Mm. And we're inches away from working together, but Trini at that promotional release party was telling everybody at that party, oh, Joe Chavira, we're going to work together, we're going to write a song. And we hadn't done anything yet. And I was going, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. So I was loving it. And, you know, he was going, yeah, this is Joe. And me and him are going to work together on original songs. He was so excited for the first time to write. He's written a couple of originals here and there, but 50 songs, 3 albums. It was a library, a catalog of originals that he's always wanted to do, and we did it. So my mom called at the Steve Miller party thing with Trini, and you know, she's just, Joey, just, are you okay? Just checking on you. And I'm like, hey, Mom, I'm with Trini Lopez. And so he said, hey, let me talk to your mom. So we went out outside of the party by the pooler out in the, it was La Quinta, right off Washington Street, if everybody knows where that's at. And so Trini goes, Lillian, how you doing? Trini Lopez. And he always talks like this. And I used to imitate him, make him laugh. And he'd go, your son's really talented. He plays every instrument, and we're gonna make him worldwide with music. Watch this. And my mom goes, oh, okay, well, Joey, he works hard, and blah, blah, blah. And it happened.
There you go.
It went, boosh.
There you go.
So, very thankful, very happy.
That's good, man. So the show that we're going to see and everything, besides the video and stuff, what other entertainers were you able to pull in for the special event?
Okay, we have the icon of Las Vegas, Zoe Bowie. He's been a known act out there. He'll be in there. We've got Prince, Fleet Easton open the act. We have Steve Howard, celebrity star, warm-up artist, America's Got Talent, Dr. Phil. He's done so many things in film, and he's a friend of Fleet's. So he says, hey, you know, can I be involved with this thing? I want to open it up and rock the people and get them excited. So we constructed a good itinerary of a schedule that this show won't be just a standard watching guys holding instruments singing. I'm going to interact with the audience. We kind of have the same feeling as the Rat Pack when Sinatra and Dean Martin, Sammy, they wouldn't just stand there and sing. They would interact, make it a show. And that's what I've coordinated this thing to do, is lots of little surprises I don't want to give away that will happen there.
Okay.
And, besides the home private videos that people see for the first time of Trini and I actually working. And then I'll share one little thing. Trini's nephews, 16 people from Dallas, his family is flying just to see this show. And they told me just yesterday that they have a gift for me that they're going to surprise me with on stage. So uh-oh. I'm going to bring up, yeah, they're going to be some gift. I don't know what the gift is, but then they also said they're going to bring Trini's classic Sunburst Gibson guitar for me to play some of Trini's songs
awesome.
With that guitar and his hat. I don't know if I'm going to wear the hat, but so if we're going to bring Trini's hat, that cool black sombrero hat thing he used to wear.
Yeah.
If you want to wear it, do it. And it's all going to be captured on film by Grant Spiller, award-winning film director. He's done all my videos on YouTube. If you guys see Joe Chabert videos, it's Grant Spiller. He'll be filming this event. We're trying to capture it, like reenact Trini's classic at PJ's, where Don Costa recorded him live over there. And I remember Trini telling me, you know, he was broke. He was trying to make it, and he finally got a break, and he says, oh, I get to go to the recording studio. And he goes, no. We're going to record you live, capture the audience at PJ's, and it became one of his biggest hits. So we thought, why not repeat history and have a live show filmed of Trini when he passed to way back when he started? It kind of starts and concludes in the same exact fashion, live at PJ's, live at the Rockstar.
Right.
So going to be neat.
That's good. And before we let you go, Joe, I know that you recorded a newer song here called If By Now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, If By Now is unique because it's the last song that Trini and I wrote together. And ironically, it was 4 months before he died, 3 or 4 months, the very, very, very last song we wrote together. And Trini was healthy. And I filmed him with my cell phone. That's how we always operated. Behind his white grand piano with all the gold records in his front room. And he points at the camera and says, hey, everybody, Trini Lopez, Joe and I wrote this valuable song for COVID and telling everybody, please be safe out there. And he points at the camera. And that's the last film that you'll ever see of Trini Lopez that I'll be showing at the concert. So the song was a tribute to people that had it at the time. And it was to kind of like recognize those that passed. So now that Trini passed of COVID, it made it even more memorable and honorable to say that, like a captain that goes down with his ship to save the crew, mm-hmm. Trini wrote a song with me, the last one, and then he died of what he was trying to help the world with. So it's a huge, huge story, right. You know. And you can get the tickets either on Rockstar Bar website, JoeShaveraMusic.com. You'll see tickets on there to get it. I think it's the other one is Joe Shavera Leap, TicketLeap or something.com.
Yeah, I have it here. Yeah, it's Joe Shavera, and Shavera is spelled Chavira dot TicketLeap.com. And that's where you want to go get the tickets. And there's two types of tickets. There's the regular tickets and the VIP tickets. Real quickly, tell people what they're going to get when they get the VIP tickets.
Okay. Well, first, the general ticket is you get in. But the VIP is you're going to get a Trini and Joe CD. It has 14 songs in it. Some of them have all three albums in it. Depends what package you get. But the VIP people get this nice, cool black bag that has the Trini Lopez Joe Shaver CD, pictures of me and Trini that I'll autograph. I brand it with a company called Joanne Bling Bling Sunglasses. So we thought we'd throw that in there. Joe Cool Sunglasses. It's part of a merchandising marketing thing. And so that's what you get for. Oh, then you take pictures with me and the band after the show. VIP, and I sign an autograph on the Trini Joe picture, so it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Well, brother, I cannot wait to get out there on stage with you. I know you're bringing out for a couple of songs, you know, and everything, so I'm very excited for this, and I'm very honored that you had asked me to join you in this, because, you know, Trini, that's, I think, the thing that connects the two of us together is the love that we have for that man. You know, we got to interview and got to know him a little bit, but you actually got to work with him, which I'm definitely envious about. But, yeah. You know, you got to work with him, you got to know him on a different level, and that's just awesome. So to include me into this on your show, it's definitely an honor for me to do that. And I can't wait to get out to Vegas in the 100-plus degree weather. You know, and yeah. And get there and start jamming some Trini songs and everything, and be a part of this historical event.
Oh, we're glad to have you. You're a talented guy, great personality, and good friend of mine now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So once again, guys, this is Joe Shaveira, and the event is going to be on August 11th at the Rockstar mm-hmm. Bar in Las Vegas. You're going to go to JoeShaveira.TicketLeap.com to get tickets, or go to his website, JoeShaveira.com. Also, to get the tickets there, just look for the same link. And you can find him on Facebook also. And if you want, like I said, you got the choice of just showing up and getting in, or getting the VIP and meeting the whole band afterwards and everything, and getting the Joe Cool glasses, of course, are very, very important in Vegas, because when you're in Vegas, nobody wants to see your hungover eyes. So you might want to get the VIP glasses anyway. So,
and remember, you guys, it's going to be live filmed, so you guys will be part of history. And the day that we're doing this, it's a huge thing to end this with, is the day that Trini passed. That's why it's not on a Friday night, Saturday. It's 1 year anniversary, August 11th, that he passed. So yeah. Be part of music history, everybody.
Absolutely. Come on down. Joe and I will be there, but I'll be in the background playing. Joe's going to be out front singing and, you know, yeah. and looking sexy and making all the moves and interacting with the crowd, you know, and making all the girls swoon. Maybe some of the guys, too. I'm not too sure, but, you know, it's Vegas. You never know.
There you go. Yeah.
Joe's good.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And you guys, thank you, Sean. Hello, everybody of Sean's audience. It's going to be great.
All right, brother. I will see you in Vegas in a couple of weeks, my friend.
Okay. Take care. Thank you very much.
You too, buddy. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. There you go. Joe Shaveira. Doing a good job.
Yeah. What more needs to be said?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really cool, though, that he's bringing a bunch of people that, not just at a higher level, because I know He's revealed certain secrets to me that I'm not going to discuss, though, about certain people who are going to be there, certain celebrities. Mm-hmm. But also some of the local people that Trini knew that are performing. You know, and we got to interview Fleet, you know, a couple of weeks ago and everything. So, and I didn't know a damn thing about Fleet. But now to see him and you know, to see, and now he and I are buds and everything. And to see his performances and stuff, you know, it's going to be kind of cool, you know, to see these local legends, I guess you could say, get together to pay tribute to a local legend in their eyes, but who was a legend to everybody in the world, you know. So it's going to be fun. So I can't wait, too. The only thing is you know, when you know, I've been talking and stuff, it's been fun because... it's like, he goes, well, you play a couple of different instruments, don't you? I said, well, yeah, but guitar's my main one. You know, I'm thinking, okay. He goes, okay, well, I'm going to have you play piano on this part. Well, yes. So, oh, man, guy's pulling me on piano. Then he's pulling me on this one. Then he's pulling me on that one. All right. So I'll be practicing piano.
You'll be up there.
Yeah. Behind a baby grand, hopefully, or something.
Mm, there you go.
That's what I'm kind of hoping for. I don't know. So we'll see. We'll find out. But no, I'm excited about to be a part of this and very honored, of course, because, you know, we were trying to get a second interview with Trini and hoping to go out to Palm Springs and interview him a second time.
That would have been so cool.
And for me to take one of my guitars, my acoustics, so at least I can play or say I played with Trini Lopez, you know, and this is going to be the second best thing, though, you know, in honor of him. So I'm very, very honored, to be a part of it. So... And once again, to get tickets, go to Joe Chavira, and that's spelled chavira.ticketleap.com, or just go to joechavira.com to get your tickets. And that's August 11th. All right, where are we at on time? Wow, actually, we're actually pretty good on time right now. So that's not too bad. That's not too bad at all. All right, well, let's do this.
Oh.
What's that? What you got?
No, I'm just seeing.
Oh.
The time.
The time. I know. We're doing pretty good, actually. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's do this. As we were talking about the Olympic stuff and some of the stress, I'm kind of like going, oh, wow, there's some of that stuff in here right now. But it's hopefully it'll be a little bit more humorous. So here we go. A funny Olympic tweets is what we got. You want to go first?
Is there music?
Yeah, I can do. I can do the Olympic fanfare again. There we go.
You want me to
I
go
told
first,
you I can play it twice. Yeah.
Okay. Water polo. On the surface, it's rugby while swimming. Beneath the surface, it's serial killers fighting to the death.
Yes.
Have you ever watched the women's water polo?
God.
They have underwater cameras. It's like shocking.
It is. It me too. Olympics are detached from real life. They should fill swimming pool with toddlers and the track with pedestrians to make them realistic.
As I'm watching the Olympics,
that too.
I'm seeing a lot of buildings and backdrops that were used in Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift. Ah, the good old days. Wow.
God. Let's see. My favorite thing about the Olympics is the expertise everyone suddenly has for diving. Oh, no, that was too much splash.
Really? Every Olympic event should include one average person competing just for reference.
That would actually be pretty good.
Yeah.
That actually be really, really good. Let's see.
Yeah. Here we are at the marathon, and Bob is about another hour away from the end.
And he's right next to Kenya. I remember there was a comedian one time who talked about where he felt really bad for the marathon runners. You know, he goes, can you imagine coming into, like, an Olympic stadium or whatever, and you're doing the marathon, and you're dead last? And he's just like, man, I've been training for the last 4 years. I gave up sex, alcohol, smoking, everything, man. I went to bed early, woke up early, I trained, and I come in dead last. I could have still done all those things and come in dead last. Oh, my gosh. Okay, where are we here? Let's see. Oh, okay. Oh, I love the Olympics, but missing Dateline. One of these athletes better end up being a serial killer or something.
Oh, my God. The Olympics are brilliant. You watch physically glorious humans while sitting on your sofa covered in Cheetos yelling, "Come on, you can do better!"
That's so true. That's what we're talking about, the pressure. Some gymnastic dude on TV just perfectly landed a triple Lindy. I can't even stand up from pooping without falling forward.
Oh, God. Watching the Olympics. I could probably do that if I practiced. Nope, just kidding. Can't even hop over the coffee table.
What is this? What?
In the... I don't know. You
I
typed it up.
No, I can copy and paste this. Oh. So in the horses stuff, in the Olympics, do the horses get medals? I think they should get a big medal on the massive ribbon so that it goes around their neck.
That'd be cute.
That'd be kind of funny, actually, you know.
The horse is all standing
up
there.
Yeah, for like all the equestrian stuff. Yeah, that makes sense. Why not give the horse a medal?
Yeah.
You know, he's the one doing all the work, jumping over everything. The rider's just riding.
Yeah. Me watching the Olympic event. Holy crap, that was amazing. Commentator. Oh, that was not good at all. He must really be upset with himself.
Yeah, that can happen. Oh, I love this one, though. Would someone go to the kitchen and bring me some Doritos? I'm busy yelling at the world-class Olympic athletes to swim faster. Yeah, that thing. There's a lot of things that we do while we watch the Olympics. So there you go. There's some Olympic tweets for you guys. All right. Let's do this first.
Okay.
It's been a tough week.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. Odd, tough week.
We've lost quite a few people this week. The first one, I didn't realize he had this long of a history, though. But he goes back to the 60s. Did you know that?
Ooh.
Yeah. TV pitchman Ron Popeil, the inventor and TV salesman for his infomercials and catchphrases like, "But wait, there's more," and "Set it and forget it." Unfortunately, he passed away due to a brain hemorrhage at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center here in Los Angeles the other day. The New York Times reported that the Ronco founder, who sold consumers everything from the Veg-O-Matic to the Pocket Fisherman, we had one of those, the Pocket Fisherman, to the Showtime Rotisserie and Barbecue and the Inside the Shell Egg Scrambler. So he was 86 years old. I didn't realize he was that old.
That's a pretty good life.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite, let me see if I've got it here, though. One of my favorite things that he actually invented was this, because I got one when I was a kid.
Hey, this Christmas party is getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone.
Hey, what's that?
Oh, you set the dial on your FM radio and testing.
Follow the radio.
Love it.
These kids are having a fabulous time with Mr. Microphone, the cordless microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around. Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
You can broadcast in mono or with two more radios in stereo.
Yeah.
Professional entertainers use Mr. Microphone for rehearsing. And you can too. It's practical and great fun for the whole family. And for only $12.88, they really make great Christmas gifts.
The perfect Christmas gift at Walgreens, Woolworth, Woolco, Osco, Venture, Weibolts, Montgomery Ward.
And half of those stores don't even exist anymore.
Hi, right. I'm Nicole.
So, but do you remember that? Did you ever get one of those, the Mr. Microphone?
I never had one of those, no.
I had to get one.
Okay, Grammy-nominated rock group ZZ Top announced that their bassist
Sorry.
Dusty Hill was dead at 72. We are saddened by the news today that our compadre Dusty Hill has passed away in his sleep at home in Houston, Texas, read a statement from surviving members Frank Beard and Billy Gibbons. We, along with the legends of ZZ, the legions of ZZ Top fans around the world, will miss your steadfast presence, your good nature, and enduring commitment to providing that monumental bottom to the top. We will forever be connected to that blue shuffling sea. You will be missed greatly, amigo.
Absolutely. And then another musician that recently passed away was Joey Jordison, the founding drummer of the metal band Slipknot. I know Zach was a huge fan of theirs.
Yes, his favorite group.
Yeah. And he was 46 years old.
That's not good.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, he was diagnosed with a neurological disorder, and they feel that was probably cause of his death and everything. So can you do me a favor and read the last one for me?
Comedian Jackie Mason passed away at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City on July 24th. He died in his sleep after experiencing breathing issues. His friend, famed lawyer Raoul Felder, confirmed to the Hollywood Reporter. Jackie, who was a rabbi before he became known for his borscht belt style of comedy, was 93. During his long career, he earned a special Tony Award thanks to the success of his first and many one-man Broadway shows. The world...
Swimming, jumping, barbells, doorbells, dumbbells, me clap, me hack, me so busy. They're crashing into walls, into furniture, shredding and clapping and hacking. But every Jew is on a bicycle. This is my very The proof is, if you take a look at any Jew, his chest is collapsing, but his legs are blowing up from the bicycle. Everything I'm telling you is the truth. Why do you think you'd ever see a Jew in a bar? You never see a Jew in a bar. I don't mean a real pickup joint where lowlifes run around picking up girls like this man. I'm talking about decent people in a real bar where there's real drinking going on. You'll never see a Jew there. Never. Unless he got lost looking for a piece of cake and a cup of coffee. Because a Jew is not comfortable in a bar. They're not comfortable there. Just like a Gentile is not too comfortable in a restaurant. When a Gentile walks into a restaurant, they're very nervous. They walk in there. How do you do? May I sit down? May I sit down? How long should I wait? 9 years? Why not? 9 years is okay. You ever see how a Jew walks into a restaurant like a partner? Hello! Let me see my table. No matter which table you show him, you call this a table for a man like me? I don't sit so close to a wall, so far from a window. My wife don't like the face this way, I don't like the face that way, we don't like the face this way. Why is there so many people in this section? They could be moved over here. The Gentiles ate four meals already, and the Jews are picking furniture. Let me see. It takes them 3 hours to pick out a table, then they start a whole new fight. Why is it so drafty here? You ever see Gentiles online in a restaurant? If you don't serve them for 12 years, they'll never complain, they'll never say a word. You don't serve a Jew for a minute. What's taking so long, those son of a bitch? I was here before them. They didn't come in before he came down. He sat down before he got up. He walked out before he came forward. I'll sue that bastard, that son of a bitch. And meanwhile, the Gentiles are sleeping.
I had to look up what borscht belt meant.
Oh.
Last night. Do you know what it means?
Mm-mm.
The last of the comedians who worked in the Catskills.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm like, what the hell is borscht? I mean, I know what borscht is. I love eating borscht, you know, but what does borscht belt mean, you know? And because I saw it on another article regarding Jackie, and I didn't know, so I looked it up, and it has to do with all the Jews who went off to the Catskills for vacation times and everything.
Right.
And it actually started back in the 1890s of them going...
Whoa, before I was born?
Before you were born.
Whoa.
By 2 years. So, but yeah, I had to look it up to find out what the hell that meant, though. True. I mean, he is one of those last standing comedians from that era,
right?
You know, overall. And I mean, did you watch him when you were younger? Or
yes. It was funny. There was a whole, you know, just like they say, a whole group of Jewish comedians back then that were all like, you know, different.
Take my wife, please, kind of
a
thing.
Yeah. It was just like they talked fast and they were funny and they had sort of like Billy Crystal had like a lot of family experiences and stuff and they were all really good. They sort of paved the way for more modern comedians to come in because there was problems back then. You had to be careful what you said, mm-hmm. and how you said it even, and they kept pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, saying something a little off color in a way that they couldn't specifically get mad at him for saying it, or they couldn't, you know, do anything about it and stuff. And, you know, it inspired people like, you know, Lenny Bruce and the people that followed and stuff.
Don Rickles and so forth through the ranks.
Step further across the line and push the right to say what you want when you're being funny.
Yeah. My introduction to him was when he actually did his first Broadway show of The World According to Me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard of Jackie Mason before, and just cracked me up in the way, and especially the way he talks. He talked like this, and then I realized, wait a minute, isn't that the same guy from the Ant and the Aardvark from the Pink Panther films?
Yeah.
You know, from the Pink Panther cartoons or whatever. And I'm going, holy crap, wait a minute, you know? And so I'm going, okay, so I've heard of this guy before, the way he talks and goes like this and everything else, you know? But that was my first thing. And then to find out his history on how he got blacklisted because of, what's his name?
McCarthy?
No. Ed Sullivan.
Oh.
I don't know if you knew about that or not.
No.
Apparently, I guess the president was doing a speech or something of that nature, and they were giving Jackie, they were cutting his time on Ed Sullivan. So they were giving him finger signals and everything. And so he started to put it in the routine. This guy's giving me a finger. I'm going to give a finger back to him. I'm going to give him a thumb, and this one, two fingers over here, and this. And in that routine or whatever, he, Ed Sullivan thought that Jackie flipped him off, is what it was, and got so angry and so upset that they say you can actually see it, so you can YouTube it and look at it and see how upset Ed Sullivan was with Jackie Mason and blacklisted him from television and everything, and so his career kind of went down, but then it, you know, 20 years later it came back, you know, because then you see him in Caddyshack 2 and stuff and what have you and everything, so. Mm. But, yeah, but you're right. Good comedian paved the way for an awful lot of people. So, well, you know, it's also National Avocado Day.
I love avocados.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe you may have a little bit of facts over there.
I have avocado fun facts.
They better be fun, damn it.
Oh, yeah, they better be. Okay, first of all, above 95% of the avocado supply in the U.S. comes from Southern California, where it stands.
There you go.
It's the state fruit. And some of them come from Mexico, but that's, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, avocado is good for keeping the eyes healthy. It's its lutein content is a powerful antioxidant that is capable of protecting eyes from high-energy light waves.
Wow, I didn't know that.
No wonder I can stay on my phone so long. I eat a lot of avocado. Avocado is a skin protector against signs of aging and UV ray effects. Moreover, avocado oil can alleviate plaque psoriasis. Two organic compounds in the avocado named beta-carotene and lycopene can improve skin tone and health and eliminate premature aging signs.
I like that.
I didn't know where that was going, but yeah.
I was wondering where you were going.
Avocado has the potential to alleviate cancer. It's
no shit, really.
Yes, carotenoid and monounsaturated fat content is associated with cancer reduction, especially when blended with the phytochemicals content of the diet. The fruit contains.
Aren't you glad just the two of us?
Glutathione as well, an antioxidant that serves as cell protection from cancer and dangerous effects from free radicals. This would have been a good thing for V to read.
Oh, I miss her.
Avocado oil is richly filled with vitamins A, B, E, and G. Its digestibility coefficient is 93.8%. However, it is still too costly to be regularly used as salad oil, despite the stated avocado nutrient facts. I always get avocados, and I use them in salad. Every time I have salad, I have avocado in it. It's so good. Avocado beats banana in potassium content. Banana may have been best known as the potassium king in fruits, but it only has 487 milligrams of the minerals. Meanwhile, avocado has a whopping 975 milligrams per piece. So it's like twice as much. The heaviest recorded avocado in the world weighed 2.19 kilograms or 4.83 pounds. Guinness World Records recognizes the fruit from Venezuela on January 28, 2009, where the owner Gabriel Ramirez Nahim grew it. Almost sounds like Willy Wonka.
That's close enough.
Where the, avocado trees have a long lifespan and a high reach. They can live 400 years, grow to 65, 70 feet. We had one in our backyard. It was about 40 feet tall. It was great. I built a clubhouse in it. Among the numerous types of avocado, the most famous is the Haas avocado. A Californian postman named Rudolph Haas discovered the specific variety in his backyard in California in 1935, and he patented.
And you could patent an avocado?
He did.
Lucky son of a gun.
I know. The name avocado originated from the Aztec world, ahuacatl, which means testicle.
The testicle fruit. I've heard that before, yeah.
Yeah. They're the tree's testicles.
Because it's the way it looks.
It does.
It does look like they're just hanging there.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, to make the best guacamole, you're going to need these ingredients. Avocados, obviously. Mm. Onions, tomatoes. But they say to choose Roma tomatoes, though. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. Cilantro, jalapeno, garlic, lime, and salt. Now, some say also use kosher salt or sea salt to bring out the flavor a little bit better. So this is what you need. Three avocados that are ripe, half a small onion finely diced, two Roma tomatoes diced, three tablespoons of finely chopped fresh cilantro, one jalapeno pepper with seeds removed, finely diced, you don't like the spicy, so yeah.
Mm.
Two garlic cloves minced, one lime juiced, and a half a teaspoon of sea salt. So really easy to do, of course. Slice the avocados in half, remove the pit, scoop them into a mixing bowl, mash the avocado with a fork, make it as chunky or as smooth as you like. Add the remaining ingredients and stir it together. Give it a taste test. Add a pinch of more salt or lime juice if needed. And serve, of course, with your favorite tortilla chips. And there you go.
And it's something you can like let sit for an hour or so, and it absorbs more of the flavor. And
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, with the peppers, you know, the jalapeno, put a little bit in or a lot in, depending on how spicy you want it. So, because I know when you go to certain Mexican restaurants that they actually serve it there, they go, how spicy do you want it? I'm like, what? How spicy do you want it?
None.
Yeah, just a little. Okay. And then they mix it up and everything, and you're going, all right, that's fine. So, all right, guys. Well, that is today's show. Hey, I found me in the basket.
There you go.
Love it.
How about that? 11:29.
I know. Right on the dot, baby. Right on the dot.
Bill Marvin and Lime are going to be happy.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, guys. Show's website is yourweeklydose.com. Facebook page is Your Weekly Dose. Twitter and Instagram. Find us at Your Weekly Dose 1.
Find me, Steve, on Steve Silva on Facebook and at SilvaLining69 on Twitter.
And also, if you want to find me, Sean, on any of the media, it's simply Sean R. Unplugged. Simple as that. And also, don't forget to listen to us on Delmarva Talk Radio at 7 a.m. Wednesday through Friday mornings. Those are all of our past shows. And also on Lime City Radio at noon Wednesday through Friday afternoons. Again, they play our past shows. And, of course, we connect with them every Saturday at 1 o'clock. And don't forget, guys, if you are enjoying the show, please tell your friends. Most importantly, you guys do that for us. And because that way we gain more listeners. So if you like the show, tell them about it. And say, hey, there's these two numbskulls. Listen to them. They don't know what the hell they're doing.
That's
fine.
Emphasis on the numb.
Exactly. So until then, guys, we will catch you next week. Be good to each other. We'll see you then.
Sing, world, sing!
Listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.